This just in, I hear that there's going to be a new comic book movie out with Superman. He's going to become a programmer. That's right, Superman becomes a programmer. His main villain will be, he's going to build a compiler as he's a programmer, of course, because you have to set the joke up before he can tell it. And his main villain's going to be Lexer Luthor, the guy who does, fights him with a compiler. Lexer Luthor. Hey, hi, guys. I'm Daniel Markovich, Nerd Roundup, and the jokes do not get any better from here on out. There's no money-back guarantee. You're in this to win this, okay? Every week we get together and we talk about tech news of the week with an emphasis just to having fun kicking some news around. I believe that a team that can goof off and play together about technical stuff can do about damn near anything. I also believe that the only way to teach how to do that is just sort of demonstrate in front of you. So each week I bring up a bunch of articles I've been reading. Sometimes we talk about them, sometimes we don't, and my friends could drop by and we shoot the shit. This week we have James Grinning and Greg Young. My friends.
Howdy, Daniel.
Hi-ho.
Hi, Greg.
Howdy.
So, Greg, I'll let you lead off the what have you been doing lately stuff.
Oh, much of the same.
Thanks, Greg.
Nothing too fun.
You find the owner to that laptop?
Yeah, he found the guy's room last week. The guy was cooking stuff in his room.
And he set off the fire alarm.
Great.
How about you, James? What have you been up to this past week? You've been a couple weeks for you, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had family visiting us. So three little grand boys, my daughter, my son-in-law. So it was pretty busy down here. There was going to be no nerd roundupping going on.
Yeah, I get jealous about a lot of stuff in life. I used to be airplanes and cool gig rigs and stuff. But now, my friend James, I'm jealous of you. All them grandkids running around playing. It sounds like a hoot.
The grandkids stuff is a hoot. I've completely forgotten everything technical I knew before that. I'm totally underwater now. But hopefully I'll get better.
Cool stuff. So what I've been doing over the past week, I wrote an essay called Learning to Stop. And the thesis of that is that we have these common themes, maintenance of code, scalability, a bunch of stuff here. And the one thing that's common to all the common themes, the common theme, is just learning to solve a problem and then going away. And because we can't go away, we have to write this highly maintainable code. And because we can't go away, we have to scale teams. And we run into a lot of additional problems because we seem unable to teach people how to stop what they're doing and leave code in a state that doesn't need a lot of maintenance. And so that's what Learning to Stop solves. So I wrote an essay and I published it, and I think 6.5 people read this week. I'm really, really, really happy. I'm going to move up to 7.5 next week. And then one person fell asleep. That was me. Fell asleep kind of halfway through. But it's been good.
I was going to say, which half of the person read it?
Yeah, I fell asleep halfway through. And it was only half of me writing it, so I don't know if I should count that as like two halves or... But it wasn't a huge audience. I was very happy with it. So this first article was sent to us by Greg, and I loaded it up first because we start talking based on a joke on the Discord channel about hardware crypto cards, hardware random number generators. And he sent me this link to this current you build it true RNG version 3 USB key. And he asked, hey, I wonder how many people have experience with hardware random number generators. And Greg, you did a poll on this?
I did do a poll, sir. And I got about 300 votes.
Oh.
What was interesting about this is I gave three options. Yes, no, and what is a hardware RNG?
That was the winner, right?
52.1% responded with what is a hardware RNG.
So
only 8.9% responded yes.
So it's a big market opportunity there, I guess, huh?
So literally 90% of people have not used one before.
So what's cool about RNGs? Why don't people know what they are, and why don't they know? You have any ideas about this, Greg?
It's rather unusual to use a physical random number generator. If you're in systems like gambling systems, it's relatively common. But for most things that we deal with, we don't really need them that much. We tend to use pseudo-random number generators.
I think that one of the first pieces of code I wrote way back in BASIC was like, you know, guess a number from 1 to 10. And then I had to have the computer guess a number. And you just call, I think, a random function in BASIC at that point. And we just thought it was, you know, a random number. It turns out...
Random function? Come on. It was R&D.
That was R&D later in my... anyway, it turned out you run it a second time, you get the same number. I was like, hey, hang on a second here. Something's going on. And for a long time, the random number generators that the programming languages and OSs provided us weren't truly random, even though they appeared to be. They just weren't.
Were they even kind of random?
They got better. At first, they repeated themselves, and then they started taking seeds. And if you gave them the same seed, they repeated. Otherwise, they didn't. And then the question became, well, how do we make a seed that we don't have to ask the guy to put in there? And the OS developers, operating system developers, started using the same stuff, like your MAC address plus blah, 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 blah. But even then, it didn't take very long for really smart folks to say, you know, we can actually guess the next number here. So you're not actually doing random numbers. And I guess in the 90s or at some point, somebody said, okay, honky butters, buddy guy people, we can do this. We'll just take, and there's lots of different ways. We trace cosmic rays. We can do radiation decay. There are a bunch of random static in the atmosphere. And so these things are used to pick up random numbers for hardware random number generators, which are true random number generators, right?
But what I'm just waiting for is when we get to the point of having an authentication system where you need to plug in your USB random number generator in order to make a login. And if you don't have that, then you will not be able to log in.
Yes, as far as I can tell, Greg, and I know I sound like a paranoid wacko now, but as far as I can tell, you really need a two-factor authentication, some sort of hardware key right now as part of your daily computer.
Oh, no, but what I'm saying is that we'll make that extra key the random number generator.
Yeah. I got the little nano ledger, and what they're doing is they're actually adding code into the USB key, so you end up with it's a random number generator, it slices, it dices, you run the laps on there, it's heck of fun.
Well, no, what makes it more fun is that it's going to just be the random number generator key that you need to bring with you.
Well,
so this way, if I forget mine, I can use yours.
I think Greg is messing with us. I'm sure of that right from the beginning.
Because everybody knows that 7 is the most random number. If you don't put 7 out, it's not a real random number generator.
Oh, no, I thought it was 3.
Oh, dang it. See, he's got his own. It's already, the whole system's gone astray already. So, for the record, the first hardware device I used was the IBM. Gosh, it was a PCI bus. Big thing. It plugged right into the motherboard and did the same stuff that you're talking about, and it was to print postage stamps because, God knows, we need a lot of encryption for postage stamps.
Never underestimate the staggering drawing power of people forging postage stamps.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a 10-part Netflix series on that and how it spreads all over the world.
Well, to be fair, it would spread all over the world.
That's true. See, you've spoiled the whole thing now because they put them on envelopes. And the whole thing gets around the world, sure.
Well, that was a good one. I guess I'm a little tired. I missed that.
About 6 hours from now, you go, hey, that was pretty funny. This happens a lot, you know. Just bear with us. You're going to laugh like a couple weeks, sometimes years later, but it'll eventually come. Next story is a PDF. It's a research paper put out by these Chinese kind of sounding dudes from Columbia, and it's all about embedding cryptographic information into fonts. So let's say you had like a font that had a lowercase e. You might have a lowercase e with like a little extra pixel on the end of the tail, or like a little extra pixel, maybe the little circle inside the top of the E is not the same size. Turns out you can make fonts convey more information than just the font, and it's dang near impossible to see. The human eye just can't make out that there's any change here.
Is there any of that in this article here?
I don't
know. Zooming in pretty far. Oh, yeah, look, there's an extra dot on that cup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, hey. Okay, there's some message. Buy more Ovaltine, I think is what it is. Yeah, it is. It's just, it was amazing to me how easy it is to put information in, because we receive so much information that there's a ton of places we can hide stuff. And hiding stuff inside of other stuff digitally is called steganography, which I'm kind of disappointed. It had nothing to do with stegosauruses, but you get what you get.
There are other really fun ways of doing this. As example, you have fonts which are almost identical to each other, but not identical to each other.
That's what this guy was saying. You can have a font that's different in ways that the human eye just can't spot. And so if you send your data via PDF or image, the person reading it just sees the font. So there's no way for them to tell all those little bits and things that are out of whack.
Yeah,
I just wish it had something to do with stegosauruses. I was just, you know, for a cool sounding word like that, I don't know what steg has to do with any stego.
It might be like the little plates on the back of the stegosaurus. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. Stenography is also uses the stego. There's a see list of commonly used taxonomic affixes. Well, hell, we got to do that, of course. This is Nerd Roundup. We can't pass that up. And here's a whole list of little prefixes: amphi, ado, archeo, arch. My life has just become enriched. Wow.
You just had fonts wrong all along, I guess.
Yeah, who knew? You could start with fonts and end up... I know you could start with fonts and end up somewhere in the Elvis kidnapping, but I didn't know you could go here.
Do you remember the scene in The Matrix where he looks at the computer and it's just like an old DOS screen?
With all the letters falling down?
No. Early in The Matrix, where he's literally just at the computer.
Oh, when he was at his job.
That was really happening.
Oh, yeah, this is when he was like the hacker back in his room.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he could have used some steganography. It would have helped out quite a bit.
Or maybe that movie was made when DOS was popular.
Yeah, you might remember Land of the Lost with the dinosaurs and a little monkey kid. Now, you don't remember that Saturday morning, Land of the Lost? Marshall, yeah, Will, Holly.
There's a number of those.
I'm pretty sure DOS was not popular when the movie Matrix was released.
DOS was not.
Probably a decade afterwards.
No, Matrix 99, I think. No, 94. Yeah, there was plenty of DOS.
Oh, there would have been some nerds looking at DOS still at that time.
If I remember right, Honeywell had
still in Windows. People still look at whatever that is.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's got a new name, PowerShell. Back in 99, you might have even been using OS 2.
I remember when you could buy like boxes.
People use OS 2?
Oh, I wrote code for OS 2. Heck. The perfect operating system that nobody used. OS 2 seriously had a bunch of stuff in it that... It took years to true multi-processing with preempting, a lot of good stuff. OS 2, rise again, my friends. Okay, so the next article is resumes are dangerous, and this guy talks about resumes will lie to you, which comes as a shock to him. And what he does, he just goes right to the guy's GitHub and then makes a lot of character judgments based on somebody's GitHub. And that struck me as being, wow. Really? And the HM comments on this were also sort of like, why in the hell would you do this, dude? This is a horrible way of looking at somebody's capabilities. And I just sort of seen that go, well, would I do that? And it's just an odd way of looking at coders. Like, just show me all your stuff you do by yourself. Because, I mean, my GitHub is stuff I do for teaching, stuff I do of my own. Just, it's everything.
That might be revealing.
It is, but I don't code for GitHub is a way of selling myself, and I understand that maybe the point is that, okay, that's what we want. Find out how you code when nobody's looking. But it's like, well, hell, I am not going to code for production if I'm trying to figure out how to use, message passing or something. It's just the different ways of coding.
Oh, and it's also that it makes a lot of sense if you're talking to somebody who works in open source.
Yes, I think their point, and I get this, if you're in an open source project, then it does matter because it's a hobby and it's something that matters to other people. And so whether you test first and all that stuff, that's critically important. But that's just limiting GitHub to open source folks.
Well, but you're also at that point putting some kind of weird constraints on things, because certain projects have certain requirements of what you will push.
Yeah.
So there are even projects where it's like, you cannot push this with unit tests. Well, you write the unit tests on your own. That's fine. But we don't want you to push those unit tests up, because we have 3,000 people working on this, and we cannot agree upon which unit tests we actually want to write.
Yeah, there's a lot of framework wars going on, I imagine.
Well, what you tend to end up with in that bizarre scenario is you have, let's say, a large project. Then you have three or four different test projects.
Right.
May or may not align with each other.
That's why the JVM and the .NET CLR, I guess it's CIR now, that's the beauty of that. You can use a two dozen different languages that compile to just one EXE type thing. Who cares? Just as long as you test the stuff. So yeah, I like this idea of looking at my code when, you know, I'm not watching. I think I would prefer, okay, send us a 5-minute video of a tour of stuff you've done on GitHub, and we'll go look at it ourselves, because that allows me to go, okay, well, this is something I spent a week on. Don't look here, because this is like an hour's worth of stuff I threw away. It's much more rational to me. Because, I mean, I got some cool stuff that I'm proud of.
Expecting rational is not very rational.
As a consultant, I've been down this how do we interview people and how do we evaluate people many, many times. And I have yet to find something I'm completely happy with. It's a black art. Best thing I'm happy with is like the audition format. We're like, okay, we think we like you. Just show up. We'll pay you for a week and we'll see if it works.
And that's been one of the most effective ones.
It hasn't. You know, I've done that as on the other side. I've done this, hey, you know, you guys like me so far. If you're having a problem pulling the trigger, tell you what, I'll show up for a few days. We'll play together. If you don't like it, don't pay me. Go home. And that's worked well. Every time I've used that, it's worked well for everybody.
That works good for people that don't have a job. A regular job, right?
That's correct. The difficulties when you're trying to switch jobs.
Yeah. I'll just be gone for a weekend.
Oh, come on. You can put in 16-hour days.
Yeah, if you're auditioning for many teams, all you have to do is like attend like 50 meetings. Yeah, how good do you do a Jira static, a ticket pull? We got to watch that. Okay, so this speaking of GitHub and evaluating people by their GitHub projects, this guy on Hacker News, I think over the weekend, he said, you know, I've been out of coding for a while, thought I would come back, and I wrote this lunar lander using 3D voxels in the web. And it looks most awesome. Fair warning, I haven't played it, but the screenshots are like, oh my God, I remember Lunar Lander. I remember it was fun to play. And if he's actually done this in the way it looks, yeah, that looks really cool. That's a really great show-off project. Yeah, big hit with the other hackers. Yeah, by the way, if you guys don't know, a voxel, I know you guys know, but folks outside, a voxel is a 3D pixel. So if you're programming a voxel, you're actually programming 3D pixels and a cube, and then the computer maps that to some sort of viewport.
What's it called, a voxel?
A voxel. It's a vertical pixel. It's based on the pixel word.
Yeah, my son probably knows about those.
Yeah, it's... You know, when you're doing 3D, there are a bunch of different ways of doing it. Some people do, like, you do everything in triangles, like a mesh, and then the computer figures out what it looks like. That's the way they did the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. But probably the best way of doing it is to actually specify each little pixel, each little cube, break up the scene into little cubes and make them different colors, and then have the computer render it however you want to. But it's really hella complex computationally for the computer to do that. So it's not used very much. But it is getting more and more popular as we get more horsepower. If you guys seen that like true 3D stuff where like the guy looks like a hologram and you can look around to different sides, that is projecting voxels because it is it's a true image that you could actually slice in half and look at. There's a volume of pixels there to see. This next one is kind of cool to me because as a programmer who writes systems, a lot of times I ask people, okay, kind of problem are we going to solve? And reading various commentaries from psychiatrists over the years, they're like, you know, we're really smart because we're psychiatrists, but damn, we got some messed up ways of looking at stuff. And the main reason why is that psychiatry is the DSM, which is five's the current version, looks at everything from the outside. So, like, you know, if you had a runny nose, they would categorize like runny nose problem. And of course, you could have a runny nose for a bazillion different reasons, but to them, they categorize all these things from like the outside symptoms instead of actually what's happening. So, to continue my analogy, a runny nose, doctors can tell you, well, it's rhinitis and it's due to this inflammation and blah, blah, blah. So, doctors have a theory of what's happening inside that then says you have a runny nose. Psychiatry is much more about, you know, runny nose with sore ear, blah. And so they're much more concerned with grouping externally visible things. They don't really have a theory of the mind, so they don't really know what the hell's going on inside there. And it causes problems. So this interests me because psychiatrists are having the same problems we have when we do big systems. It's like, I got this thing, nobody will tell me what it does, but they want me to code it. And so they're experiencing our world, just like more complicated. And actually, this is the conclusion this guy reaches is that we need to start looking at network analysis. And so we need to build a model of the brain that even if we don't know what it is, we'll consider it to be little nodes that are connected to one another and then talk about ways in which the nodes must be connected to show these clusters of symptoms. So instead of calling it, you know, just the externally visible thing, we're going to start trying to figure out how this 3D graph exists inside the head, even if we don't know what the graph is. And I think that's immensely fascinating, and it actually plays into a whole bunch of other stuff, AI and stuff we've talked about before. Yeah, it's just cool stuff. Everybody is coming to software, truly, my friends, is eating the world. They're all coming to us. We've been coding this stuff all along, so we've been struggling through all this shit, and they're like, hey, you know, these nerds are like figuring some stuff out. Let's use the stuff the nerds did. Fun time to be alive.
I wonder if it'll be able to explain this phenomenon. Everybody's normal till you get to know them.
I've had some policeman friends over the years, and all of them almost universally told me that everybody is messed up. It's just whether you know whether they're messed up or not. That's the only... Some people are good at hiding it. Some people are functional. But everybody, really, if you dig down far enough, are just kind of crazy in their own way. So this, I almost deleted this because it's the same damn story we did last week, but it's like I didn't want to leave these guys out. This is the third or fourth article in the last few months that take a picture of a person and the computer will guess the 3D model of what that person's like. And then you can put them in voxels in front of you, like your desk or whatever, and you can see the entire person. So here we got a picture of this lady and the computer's like guessing what the entire 3D figure's like. It's just wild. So I can tell that we're going to end up very, very quickly, like within years, maybe a year, with take a picture on your cell phone, and then here's grandma in 3D. We can rotate her around, you know.
Oh, come on.
Just like Star Wars.
Yes, just like Star Wars. And then we talked about earlier, you can make them talk, which is even more messed up. It's like, oh, my God.
Well, they kind of got this girl's hair wrong in the back. The part they couldn't see, they assumed it must be a different color.
Yes, I saw that.
Come on, have we not read Ray Bradbury?
Yeah.
Certainly, it's going to turn out into something more than that.
So I saw this deepfake video. This was freaking awesome. It was the recent Batman, I think with the one with George Clooney or one of the more recent ones. So The Dark Knight Rises. But it had Adam West as Batman. And so it showed scenes from the modern Batman movie, but when it flipped over to Batman, it was Adam West as Batman. It's like, holy cow. It's like the old Batman became the new Batman. It was really, really neat.
Kind of a cool website to play with. You can spin these people around. You go down to the 3D viewer.
Yeah, woo.
Go down there and...
Wait, were you just saying that you were excited that you found a spinner?
No, this is not 3D spinner.
Maybe I don't get out much, Greg.
Yeah, we're going to have some kind of, like, guaranteed by Disney or some, like, stamp, or we're already at the point where you can't trust any video you see at all. And Abraham Lincoln said that, so I know it's true. Okay, so like I said, I almost deleted that one. This is an essay I disagree with, but dang, it made me think in terms of Yoda, so I liked it. The guys start with who, not why. And his thing was, hey, instead of asking why you're coding this, ask you who the people are, and then that'll help you more. So I agree with what he's saying, but so the way I look at it's like this. You got a team. You want to do stuff from people. Who are those people is the first question. And to his point, I agree with that. Once you know who those people are, they're going to ask you to do stuff. That's when the why come in, right? It's like them asking you. And then when you look inside your own team and ask how you're going to do this, you know, then the who's the team determines what you're going to end up doing. So who's important, but it's just important because it just generates other questions. It's not important on its own. It drives everything else.
How?
Why?
Was that the persona concept of the user or whatever of a system?
Yes. Yeah, and I tell you what, I found it more useful. I actually did not like it in user stories and story mapping because it just seemed kind of weird. But in startups, I found that it's better. Successful startups are like, we're going to help bakers. And so they identify like a category of people. And then they have a theory. We're going to help bakers by doing whatever. And many times the theory is incorrect. Like the thing we made isn't the thing they want. But we still have the bakers. So we talk to them and pivot. And that helps them do a successful product. But without the identifying exactly who first, you end up screwing up the rest of the thing. It's a good idea. And anything that sounds like Yoda, sign me up for that. It's good.
Good should be software, yes.
So here we got the scientists have now invented a new improved second. So like hour, minute, second. Whoa. Yeah, hey, this is like.
How do you improve on such a basic thing?
It's 2.0, man. It's like this second's like shinier, fat. It does. It's not faster. It's the same second, but it's much better this way.
If it won't get longer or shorter,
it's much less relative.
Yes. What they're doing is they're trying to create the entire system of metrics by how to measure things, metrics, from like base things. So I think they're doing the cesium atom vibrates a certain number of times to make a second. So they're trying to reduce everything down to the simplest thing possible and then generate all sorts of measuring off of that. So that's used to be, I think the second was just 60th of a minute, but no, not good enough. Now we have a perfect second here. It's a bippum.
Greg, you made some comment about relative. Were you going Einsteinian on us?
No.
Well, that's surprising.
Yeah, I thought we were going to some general relativity here at some point, but no.
Well, no, but it's the main problem that we have with concept of time is relativity.
Okay, so
as you would speed up, as an example, the time would be perceived differently.
No, not so much. That's a frame.
Well, it depends how we're measuring it. If we're measuring it with a watch, yes, it would be.
Depends on the frame of reference. So that's the thing. Relativity says that to you, everything's always good. No matter what speed you're traveling at relative to me. To me, if you're traveling faster, you get shorter, your seconds all messed up. You got a lot of problems, man. But to me, I'm happy. I'm a happy guy. you can't tell inside a really fast moving vehicle that you're in a really fast moving vehicle, which leads me to ask, well, how don't we all know that we're all running at the speed of light? So then I start getting confused and I have to write letters. It's like a But yeah, so it's kind of cool that they're doing the cesium stuff. I'm still thinking at some point, like, clocks are going to take over, like, really, really cool, like, micro-relativity measurements. And maybe another 10, 20 years, we're headed that way. Like, it's technically possible to build three really, really super precise clocks, put them in an array, and then measure mass in their room. It's computationally...
Yeah,
it's insane to do. I'm sorry.
Well, this statement, the new definition of kilogram rests on the second. Sounds kind of weird.
Yeah, that's wild. The architecture of global measurement depends on the second.
I'd like to see the units conversion there.
Yeah, it's going to, that's wild. You're just going to head back to C. It's at some point you're going to get into C, I think, and then at C builds everything out of that, I think. I don't know.
Oh, and they made a nerd joke in here. Cesium the day.
I saw that.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, look at that. Cool lasers. Must have lasers.
Yeah, laser's good.
Yes, laser's good. I read also the other week that it turns out that a lot of people are really becoming obsessed with watches, like, complex older watches, Rolexes and all that. It becomes quite the faddish thing for nerds now.
Yeah, I've been doing it for years.
I have some friends as well that are watch people.
I've got several cool watches.
Ah, very nice, Greg.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me turn it around. Back is actually more interesting than the front.
Oh, cool, you can see inside it.
Neat.
Is that that's the clockwork, right?
Correct.
Yeah, you'd sent me a link a couple months back to Russian watches, I think you could buy cheap, and they were some really cool looking watches.
That is a Russian watch.
Yeah, it was like a watch with all sorts of gizmos and dials and all that stuff. It was like $30 or something.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre how cheap they are.
I have a Breitling. My daily watch is a Seiko, but it's a Seiko like combat hard watch or whatever. I have a dive watch with a little bezel and all that. Pretty cool. I've got a watch that's solar powered, so I just leave it in the windowsill, and it's always powered up. That was kind of neat.
Yeah, that's what this Citizen is that way. This is a titanium. Heavy compared to my other titanium. It gets charged by ambient light.
My dad had a self-winding watch. You guys remember that, where you just, as you move around, it somehow winds itself?
Yep. If you go to Shanghai and a watch salesman comes up to you, genuine fake Rolex, shows you inside of his coach, and then they'll, that's words that they know in English, genuine fake Rolex, and then he'll take them and shake them next to you. You can hear them winding, which I don't think real Rolexes do self-winding, do they? But
very cheap, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, the ones that are $10 don't work when you get them back to the U.S., but the ones that are 25 usually work pretty good, yeah.
My stepdad went on, he used to do RV traveling. He went to New York City and he came back with, he gave me one of these $10, $15 Rolexes. It was, I don't remember what happened to it, but I remember it was really, he was like, hey, it's a fake. I'm like, cool.
Oh, it's not as cool as the ones you get in China, because those are genuine.
Yeah, this was not a genuine.
Genuine fake.
Just to add, Rolexes actually do self-wind.
Oh, do they? Cool. Okay.
That's what's known as the perpetual movement.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay.
And then there are watches that somehow get the atomic time from the radio and reset themselves so that they're constantly resetting the time so they're accurate. But those, I think, are called atomic watches. Okay, so this is next one, sort of a brain stretcher. This is the birth of a new science called biocosmology. And it's the idea that there is nothing really different between the way the universe works and the way life works. It's all just sort of a spectrum of, you know, entropy. Lots of smooth stuff to like really complex stuff.
It's just a fractal thing, huh?
It's all fractals. That's it. What they're saying is the same kind of fractal stuff you see like in a supernova that comes down to like amino acids in a comet, just keeps going all the way down, that there's no bright delimiter. The theory of the adjacent possible. All right, that sounds awesome. It's like, yes, I had the wrong answer, Professor, but it was right next to the correct answer on the test. So I'm thinking, theory of the adjacent possible, huh? You got that one, huh? Yeah, this is just a cool idea. I have no idea whether it's going to hold up or not, but it's like, wow, if you could come up with one theory of complexity and chaos that sort of scaled all the way down to, like, you know, me, that would be awesome. Biocosmology. Okay, so this one I didn't know about because it's new. This next one I did not know about either, but this next one might be something you guys will be exposed to. Have you ever heard of fractal wood burning?
No.
No?
I got a laugh out of this one.
Yeah, I hadn't either, and I thought maybe it was like burning wood like outside in these little wood stoves they make to generate your own power, but no. This is some wild stuff. This is, wow. I didn't know you... I guess I knew it was probably possible, but it's not something anybody in their right mind would actually do. So the next article is that... Yep. Wisconsin man and woman electrocuted to death while trying highly dangerous TikTok art trend. So as it turns out on TikTok, somebody showed people how to do this fractal wood burning thing, which, like I said, I thought was like something to do with sticks or whatever. And then dozens of people have died around the world trying to do this, including some people who were electricians and should have known better. Greg, did you read this?
Yep.
That's some messed up stuff, man.
Oh, but this is also very similar to the table I said I wanted to recently.
So the way this works, I got a picture somewhere. The way this works, you... take apart your microwave. So if a thing begins with take apart your microwave, it's not, from here on out, it's not good. Not good. So take apart your microwave, pull out the transformer of your microwave, take your microwave and somehow hook it up to a piece of wood, and that piece of wood will generate these beautiful fractal patterns.
It's basically going to go through the wood, and it's going to make a pattern.
And it's very pretty.
You use a microwave oven for it.
No.
Well, you use a transformer from one. Yeah.
Oh, a transformer from a microwave. Okay.
Yeah.
Look at the picture here, guys. It's a beautiful piece of art. You could think of this as like frozen lightning.
Yeah, okay, so that pattern, is that something that's intrinsic in the wood and that this technique is bringing out?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Just like you use a Tesla coil that shoots sparks out, which is really cool. You use this transformer from your microwave to juice up your 110 volts so that you have enough volts that will go through the wood, and then it just, like it spreads through the air, it will spread through the wood and burn it and make this beautiful, beautiful fractal patterns. Fractal.
Although the one that you have there, I believe is filled in.
Like colored, perhaps.
Yes.
So after they burn the wood out, they put something in.
Yeah, so basically what you're going to do is you're going to pour in essentially a plastic to fill the area. And you can pick which colors you want. And
It's very, very, don't get me wrong, it's a very beautiful piece of wood. I just don't want to kill myself.
Are you going to make one, Greg?